song by Brocephus?
Brobocop?
Brobocop.
Fuck yeah.
The buddy cop movie we've been waiting for our entire lives.
Sick.
Have we already started recording?
We've already started recording. I wanted to get a little bit of that bro in there.
Oh, bro jangles.
Nice.
Enough.
Hello and welcome
to another episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
I was trying to think if there was a good way to put like bros somewhere in the Too Scared to Sleep, but I can't make it work organically.
Just two bros talking about spooky shit. That's what we do. All right, so we're going to do a couple of things new. Campbell, from now on, we are going to be putting a timestamp into the description of all of our podcast episodes, so you know when you can skip forward and just get to the topic. Because one of my friends, the Campbell timestamp. Because he was like, "I was listening to your latest episode, and I was 18 minutes in before you even started your topic." And I said, "Yeah, what's your point?" And he said, "Well, you know." I guess he probably doesn't have a very long commute, so it's like, you know, he's going to have to listen to 18 minutes of our bullshit, and then he's not even going to get to the topic, and he's already at work.
So I'm sorry that you have to listen to the important stuff first.
I know. Personal life and things. But anyway, we'll do that. It's not a big deal. But yeah, so we'll put in the timestamp. Look for that. Until then, I'm going to tell you all about the things that I've been doing in the last week since we've recorded.
Fuck, yeah.
We had to take last week off because you were exposed to COVID.
By two separate entities. Two of my roommates got it, and then my coworker's daughter got it. Within the same time period.
Yeah, I was almost exposed to COVID, and so I was isolating, and I didn't have it. I had like a cold. But at the same time, if you're boosted and you're vaxxed, then you can get Omicron variant, and you can have very, very mild symptoms that present themselves like a cold. So maybe I didn't have it, maybe I did. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. I'm going to still claim that I'm on Team Novid, that I haven't had it.
Amen, brother. Because
my symptoms cleared up in like 2 days.
And then it was probably just allergies, because everybody's allergies have been so fucked here recently.
Absolutely. But anyway, I was hanging out with my girlfriend, and I went over to her house, and she was watching a show called Cheer on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And she was on season 2, the last episode. And she's like, "This is the last episode." And she kind of gave me a synopsis of it. She says, it's all about the world of competitive collegiate cheer.
Hmm.
Right? Okay. So apparently it's a huge thing. There are universities from all over the country that have cheer groups, and it's all like gymnastics, and it's dancing, and it's tumbling, and it's all this other stuff. And they train for years to do this. You got kids who started when they were like 6 years old, and they're doing cheer. And they just keep going up into this pyramid of competition to try to become like the grand national champions or something like that. There's only one competition, and it's like at the end of May, at the end of their school year in Daytona Beach, Florida. And if you win, obviously you're the big shit, right?
Fuck yeah.
But it's like the sad part about it is that these kids have been, you know, investing their entire lives and their bodies to being, you know, these competitive cheer teams, and they go to this competition, and if they win, it's great and everything, but there's nothing else for them to do within the world of cheer after they're out of college.
There is no
like minor league. There's no competitive league for adults. There is no Olympic sport for them to do. And so it's kind of over for them at that point, which is kind of sad because they put in a lot of work.
It's like your entire life is building up to that thing that then has like a natural conclusion. And like, what do you do from there?
Not to mention that, I mean, you know, there are thousands of colleges and they all have kids who are trying to compete. And then only a certain number, like only 40 kids can be on the cheer team. And out of that 40, only 20 are actually going to compete on that day. And not every college is going to have the resources, and I don't know whether it's a point system or how you get invited to that. So it's very, you know, it's very, very limited for the number of kids who are actually going to be able to go to this competition and win, which is another sad part about it, because you've got all these kids. I mean, you know, it was crazy as I was watching it with her a couple of episodes. It's like, you know, they've got multiple concussions, and they torn their ACL, and they've had to go to therapy, you know, physical therapy, or they've had a surgery and all this other stuff just to be able to compete. And it's just crazy that they're putting their bodies through so much effort, you know, for so little reward at the end. So she was telling me all about that. And then she told me that the top cheer college in the entire country is actually Navarro Community College in Corsicana, Texas.
Really?
Of all places, of all college. It's a 2-year community college, and they are the top cheer team in the entire nation, and they are crazy balls deep.
That is about their wild.
Cheer. Yeah, and their coach is like, you know, she's into it. She was on the cheer team at some point, and she lived in this town. This is like her full-time job. Nothing says white privilege. Like, my only job is to be the community college cheer coach. I mean, to be able to do that full-time.
That's true.
Exactly. But anyway, enough about that. I talk about that enough already. But, so, Navarro Community College, 2-year college. So she only has these kids for 2 years, where the other universities have them for 4 years, mm-hmm. right? So they are the top. And then the number two, their biggest competitor is actually Trinity Valley Community College, which is in Athens, Texas, which is only 50 miles away. And these guys are like number one and number two in the
entire. That's crazy that the top two out of the whole country are within mm-hmm. like 50 miles mm-hmm. of each other mm-hmm. in the same state.
In the same state. But they are the top. And so she was telling me about it. And then she tells me, and so I was listening, you know, it's not exactly my cup of tea, but I was watching it because, you know, she wanted me to watch it. We were watching it. And she was, you know, it was only like the last five or 10 minutes that I was watching of that last episode of the last season that's come out. And then she says, there was actually some controversy. And I was like, what? Here's where it gets exciting. So apparently what happened was the first season was shot and then it released in like 2019. And then they had to shut down because of COVID in 2020. And obviously. So it was like a year where they couldn't film. And then they filmed, and then they filmed season two. But what happened is, in season one, it basically talks about Navarro Community College and their cheer team. And there's a lot of people on the cheer team that they highlight. You know, they talk about the coach, but they also talk about certain members of the group. You know, there's this one girl who's basically like a pro, and she does it on the side. She does it with like kind of like a semi-pro team, you know, like an actual like gym has a cheer team, and she goes out for them, and she's like one of the heavy hitters, kind of like a ringer on the team. And so she's really good at it. And there was another kid who, he was like the son of, he had like three brothers and a sister, and their mom was in and out of jail. And at one point she was in for 5 years. And damn. So the mom gave custody of these kids to the nanny, and she took care of them this entire time. And he's really good. And, he got a lot of heat because he was really good at cheer, and his brothers didn't understand, and he was gay, and his brothers didn't understand that. They used to try to beat it out of him. So it's a really sad story. There's another girl who had a brother who was also about her same age, and when their dad divorced their mom and then he remarried, he basically abandoned them and didn't take care of him, and just kind of started this new family. And at one point he bought them a trailer home, and they were living there by themselves until the grandparents took care of them, took them in. So it's like all of these sad stories, right? But the saddest story that was on there was of this kid named Jerry Harris, who had been in cheer his entire life. He was a pretty heavy set kid when he was younger, but he'd always been in it. And his mom had to work two jobs. They were homeless at a certain point. They were living in a hotel, but she always managed to always keep money, or, you know, always have enough money to continue to have him in cheer all the time, because it was the thing that he loved the most out of everything. And so when he was like a junior or a senior in high school, his mother died of lung cancer.
Oh no.
Right. So he's basically orphaned, but he's still doing cheer. And then one of the cheer moms that knew him from the gym took him in, and he'd been living with her ever since, living with her and her kids and just being part of the family. And he goes to Navarro Community College, and he lives somewhere near Chicago. And so, you know, it talks about him. And what happened was when that first season came out, the cheer team became media darlings, and they were on Good Morning America. People were talking about them all over the place, and they were on Oprah. They were on Ellen, and Jerry Harris became like this rising star out of the group because he's really flamboyant. He's very encouraging. You know, it's this underdog story and all this other stuff that everybody loves. Ellen sent him to the Oscars to be her red carpet correspondent.
Holy shit.
So it was big news. But what happened was...
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I don't like when you get that look in your face.
This plays heavily into the end of the story. Oh, no. What happened was, between season one and season two, allegations started coming out.
Oh.
That Jerry Harris was a sexual predator and a pedophile.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so it turned out that these allegations were substantiated.
Oh no. Yes. Fuck.
And
hate
so,
to see it, man.
Yeah, basically what happened was there were these two twin boys who were younger than him, but were under the age of 18, which makes it illegal and horrible and reprehensible in every light. And he was messaging them, asking them for nudes, sending them videos, sending them all this other stuff, terrible stuff like that.
Oh, God damn it, dude.
So the mom had gone to the gym, and she had put these allegations out there. She'd gone to, like, the national conference of whatever it is, you know, the whatever it's called. I don't remember what it's called. And she had made these allegations, and nobody really had taken it very seriously, which we see that, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We see that. But then she actually went to the FBI.
Oh, fuck.
And the FBI took it very seriously, and they arrested this kid.
Good.
And now he's in prison, awaiting trial, and it's sad all the way around. And I'll tell you why it's sad all the way around, because I was watching a news story about the two kids who made the allegations, and they were there, and they were saying, you know, he would send us these kinds of text messages, he would send these messages through Snapchat, asking them for photos and videos, sending them photos and videos.
Mm-hmm.
Being a predator on them. And then at one point they were showing a Snapchat conversation that he was having with them. He was like, we're at the competition and I found a place where we can just be together. Just the two of us. Which is just so creepy. Makes
God
your skin
damn
crawl.
It. God damn it.
And the little boy was like, no, I don't think that's a good idea. And he's like, well, and then Jerry was like, no, I guess you're right. And then like a couple of minutes goes by and he says to the kid, you know, I just don't think that we should be friends anymore. You're right. This isn't right. And of course we know, because this is the kind of thing that we research, that's emotional abuse. That's grooming. It really is.
Oh,
the idea,
yeah, 100%.
Of you're this privileged person in my life. And now because you won't do this thing with me,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to take that away from you.
Yeah. It's horrible.
It really is.
Abusive.
It's grooming.
Yeah. When done to a fucking minor.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting.
But what's most disturbing about that is if you do research on sexual abuse and grooming, like we have, that kind of behavior is a learned behavior.
Unfortunately, yes.
Which means that somebody probably did that to Jerry Harris in the past.
Yeah.
But it's really sad. And so obviously I was watching, and my girlfriend didn't tell me which of the cheer kids was the one who had been arrested. So obviously once that episode stopped, I was like, oh, we got to start it up and we got to watch. And I was like watching it, trying to figure out who it might be.
Oh my God.
Oh, so creepy.
Played into that investigative journalist
side.
Yeah.
Again, you know, if I'm going to be dating somebody, they have to have a knack for this sort of thing and mm-hmm. really like true crime. And she does, which is always great on that level. So we can watch those things. Something else that I watched was Archive 81 on Netflix, which is a really good series.
Okay. See, I have heard really mixed reviews so far. You and my mom have said that it was good, but I've seen a bunch of the people that I follow that do movie review shit, 'cause I'm a fucking nerd. Were saying that it was like kind of bland and unimaginative, and I was like, it feels like one of those things that could be either really good or very cookie cutter. So I just haven't messed with it yet, but it's definitely on the list.
It's like really derivative. I mean, you can say, okay, this comes from here and this comes from there, and this is influenced by this and this. You know, you can pull out parts of it. And it's like, oh yeah, but a lot of stories are like that.
Yeah,
you
I know, mean, everything's like, a version of a version.
Everything's a version of a copy of a copy of a copy. Don't you know? George Lucas didn't just wake up one morning and say, oh, I'm going to invent the hero's journey.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
No, it's been around for thousands of years. Yeah. You know? Star Wars is the story of King Arthur, and you know, told in a space opera through the lens of American graffiti. It really
yeah,
is.
That's...
And it's like, you can see it's step one, step two, step three. And mm-hmm. step three is Star Wars. You know, it's
yeah.
King Arthur, and then it's And then it's American graffiti, and then it's Star Wars, and
yeah.
then it's like, you know, and then they take Star Wars and they're like, oh, the most exciting component of Star Wars is Han Solo, and the idea that he's a smuggler. Let's make a story just about that, and we'll make Firefly, and then somebody watched Firefly and is like, yeah, that's really cool, but let's put it back in the Star Wars universe, and we'll make a Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, everything is just. It's just a central thing that tangents off and eventually tangents off from there and circles back, and it's all the same shit, guys.
It really is. And that's okay. You know, I mean, we tell stories all the time and they're derivative of other stories.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's how storytelling happens.
Yeah.
The coolest thing about Archive 81 is that it actually started off as a podcast. a story podcast.
Okay, that's cool.
It's actually on Spotify if you want to listen to it.
Is it also Archive 81?
It is.
Okay.
It's called Archive 81, and it's from it's really cool.
From what I've heard, it's kind of reminiscent, or at least like the same kind of general premise, in the way that like King Arthur is the same thing as fucking Star Wars. That's very reminiscent of the Magnus Archives, which I don't know if you've listened to a whole lot. I think I showed you a couple episodes, but Magnus Archives is really good. And that whole thing is set up where it's just a dude who is recording himself going through the archives of this mysterious institute and like listening to the real fucked up shit that happens. It's pretty good, actually. I really dig it. I need to listen to more. But, you know, I always thought that would be something that would be cool translated into a visual element, whether they did like, you know, it'd be cool to have like an animated series or, you know, something like that. So yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, and of course, you know, podcasts like that, like Archive 81, are very reminiscent of radio serials that have been around since the 1940s.
Yeah, fucking radio dramas and shit.
I got
real into radio dramas for a little bit when I was doing the War of the Worlds project in high school. So we were doing like our own radio drama version of it
because you were that kid.
Because I was that kid. That was actually one that I was really excited to participate in because they let me play the crazy dude that he meets like in that shack all by his lonesome. And I was cast for that, which I thought was fucking perfect. I got my voice down and I was like fucking into it.
Hell yeah, brother.
But that was the one where the morning before we were doing it, we were setting everything up, and I broke the ceiling at my school with my head and had to get 4 staples for the 2-inch incision. Yeah.
When I broke my leg, I had 35 staples put in, and I asked them to keep.
Nice.
I asked to keep them once they took them out, and I have them in this pill cup. So these
a little fucking maraca.
Yeah, these are the staples that were holding my leg together once they put that metal rod in there.
Nice.
And I have them. Anyway. Yeah, so that's about it. What else? I mean, other than that, you know, watching Dune over again. Of course, how many times can I watch Dune?
That's true. Hold on, I don't know what happened, but my camera's not cameraing anymore.
Oh, are we recording still?
I mean, we're still recording, but I'm frozen.
Oh my god, he's frozen.
Okay, I'm going to stop this recording real quick, and then we'll pick it back up. Okay, we're back. Small technical difficulties,
just
but we have returned.
Small town girl, living in a lonely world. Are we ready?
Yeah, we're recording. I got all that.
Good. I was going to sing a hymn to you earlier.
I'm sure you were. You are a fan.
Grace and peace.
Well, I actually have some fun, funky updates, too.
Let's hear it.
I took two whole days off of work, and I got to go to San Antonio to see one of my favorite bands in concert. I went to the Paper Tiger, if you're familiar with the venue. And I got to see All Them Witches, just amazing, so good. And they were opened by Blackwater Holy Light, which was also fucking rad. I'd never heard of them before, but I was super jazzed that I got to see them. Also, I was fucking front row. I was literally like 2 feet away from band members. I was leaning up against the stage. I was having a good old grand time. And I could see the look in your face, so yes. Blackwater Holy Light was super sick, and they're an all-female band. They're all beautiful, amazing, wonderful. They seem like real cool people. And there were times when the lead guitarist would look over at me and we would like make eye contact, and it was like sustained eye contact. And then it broke, and it happened like 4 or 5 times, which I'm sure was just because I was in the front row, but I'm gonna take it as she's in love with me.
1000%.
We're soulmates now.
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's,
it has nothing to do with anything else.
No, absolutely not. We're
only plausible.
So I'm gonna find them. I'm gonna reach out and confess my love.
That's exactly.
And let her know that I got her love. And then we'll get married or something. I don't know. I haven't thought that far in the future yet.
Oh my god.
But yeah, that was cool. That was super fun. It was a really cool show. I got a cool shirt. Both bands fucking kicked ass. They were so good live. All Them Witches was fucking awesome. The cool thing about them is, like, I mean, it's like stoner rock, psychedelic kind of shit. Very like blues inspired. Their guitar player was so goddamn into it. He had like his guitar connected to this like foot bass thing, or like this bass thing that had 9 different like blocks of switches and knobs and pedals and all kinds of shit. that, like, at different parts in different songs, he needed his guitar to be at, like, a different level. And he would operate all this shit with one foot in these big clunky-ass boot. And he was, like, turning dials, like, by small increments and, like, hitting, like, just the right button.
His toes?
Not his toes, the boot. Oh, he's God. Just wearing this big clunky, like, combat boot. And he's able to, like, gracefully hit all these little things. And, like, almost the whole time, he just had his eyes closed, and he was, like, mouthing the sounds that the guitar was making, like, as he was doing. He was so into it. Like, he was super passionate about it.
You sure you're not in love with that guy?
I mean, I may be a little bit in love with that guy, but he had a wedding ring.
It definitely sounds that way.
No, I was just, it was fucking crazy. Like, he did some really crazy guitar shit, but just, he was so passionate about it. I've never gotten to be, like, that close and see somebody that into it. But they were super fucking cool. It was real cool. And I got to hang out with some friends afterwards. And it was cool. I obviously got my hand tattooed on Wednesday. It's peely and whatnot, but it's looking pretty cool.
You were just covered.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot going on.
I know. But anyway, there was that. And then I've been back at work, and everything's been goofed. I'm just all sorts of goofed. All up here, in here. It's all goofed. Everything is goofed.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know how it be. Well, we're not sponsored.
You're okay, though. We're going to make it. Right?
Hell yeah,
you
brother.
You just ate a whole basket of French fries.
I ate 75% of a basket of fries.
That's a lot of fries.
I got kind of tired of the fries.
Yeah, I would think so. I offered to make you food. Like, real food.
That's true, and I'm fine. All right, I appreciate your offer. You're just a very kind old man.
Just trying to do my surrogate dad thing.
I appreciate.
All right, what's our timestamp for Campbell?
Okay, Campbell timestamp is... Well, shit. I had to stop the recording and start a new one. So we are 4.5 minutes into this clip, and then I'll have to see what the other one is. We'll figure it out. I'll fucking
12
put it in the description.
12 minutes, 32 seconds. Screw you, Campbell. That's close enough.
God. Definitely not that, but that's fine.
You're asking a lot of us, okay? A lot. All right. Are you ready for this? Let's bring some heat. Bring in the thunder.
Ready for it.
WKRX, Greater Cincinnati, all the metal hits. Hail Satan. All right. All right. I am going to tell you the sad and wackadoo story of Marvin Heavemeyer. It is insane. I know you're making that big smile. We're going to try to make this a multimedia experience. Hopefully it works the way that it's supposed
to. Yeah, we're going
to
be trying a new thing.
Mm-hmm. When I let you know, you will know. Okay, so this guy named Marvin Heavemeyer was born on October 28th, 1951 in South Dakota. And he served in the Air Force at one point and had been stationed in Colorado. And he loved Colorado so much that once he got out of the Air Force, he decided to move there to a town called Grand Lake, which is about 16 miles away from another town called Granby, somewhere up there in Colorado. It doesn't really matter. He moved there in 1991 to Granby, to the Granby area. He was a master welder, and he was working at a muffler shop, and ultimately he was able to start his own muffler shop business there in Granby. And he had a reputation of being the best welder around. He was also an outdoorsman, a real mensch, you know, loved his snowmobile, well liked by all of his friends in his communities. He would make metal bumpers for all of their snowmobiles.
Nice.
So they could basically, you know, bounce off of trees and not get damaged and
good
destroyed.
For them.
You know,
good
kind
for
of
them.
like a roll cage on a motorcycle. So, you know, We can respect that from him. One of Marv's friends said that he was a really likable person. His brother Ken said that he would bend over backwards for anybody. But there were also other people on the flip side of this coin who said that he was he had a reputation of being kind of a difficult kind of guy.
Oh, well,
yeah. And that at one point, this lady named Christy Baker said that Marv had threatened her husband because he refused to pay $120 for some muffler work that he had done on a car.
No, I mean, that's what happens when you don't pay for your goods and services.
Right? If you don't pay for your goods and services, this sort of thing happens. So eventually they got it all settled and the money was given. But here's how it started. In 1992, when he was 41 years old, not much younger than I am right now, he purchased 2 acres of land. That was being auctioned off by a bank because of a foreclosure, right?
Cool.
So he went to this foreclosure auction, and he was sitting there, and he had the money, and he was bidding, and he ended up getting outbidding everybody by only $42,000, which is what he had to pay for the land, right? And the story that Marv tells is that there was another guy there named Cody Docheff, and Cody was the owner of this concrete plant called Mountain Park Concrete, and he was also trying to bid on the property. But Cody didn't have the money. He had a friend who was going to loan him the money to be able to buy this land. And Marv outbid him because Marv had cash in hand and he was able to do it. And according to Marv, after they got done, he's over there talking to the auctioneer, you know, signing all the paperwork and everything. Cody Docheff came up to him, never met him before in his life, and just laid into him for like 10 minutes. And was chewing him out one side up and down the other about how dare you take this land. I was going to buy it, blah, 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 blah. So Marv says, look, I didn't know this guy from anyone.
Yeah.
And he's just getting in my face, acting like he owns this fucking property. You know, if you don't have the money to outbid me, then don't.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not yours if you can't pay for it.
It's not
yours. That's the whole point.
Right? Cody yells for about 10 minutes and then storms off. And according to Marv, Cody was one of these Old Town Granby guys who was part of the Good Old Boys Club. And
that
so,
sounds racist.
Mm-hmm. And so Marv says that this was the start of his troubles with the Good Old Boys Club.
Mm.
So in 1998, after he had already established his business, the town decided to zone the 2 acres next to Marv and make it commercial property.
Okay.
The town was already expanding, so like on one side of Marv's property, there was a subdivision that was being built and being developed, and then there was his area, and then a street at the front of his 2 acres, and then the land next to him got zoned for commercial, and Cody Docheff decided that he was going to buy this part of this land, and he was going to put a concrete processing plant there, right? Then Marv says to himself, this is going to create a lot of dust. It's going to create a lot of noise. You know, it could contaminate the water. And so he was very much against it. He thought it would ruin his business. Not only that, but all of the neighborhoods that are just right on the other side of his property are also going to be ruined for this.
Yeah.
So he goes to the city council a couple of times, and he's arguing about this with the city council. What's funny is that they interview a guy, and he's like, the head of the city council and also the mayor pro tem had to recuse themselves, and I was acting mayor during these proceedings because they have a conflict of interest. So these guys, again, the Good Old Boys Club.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back and forth, and Marv is voicing all of these objections, and every time that he would bring up these objections, Cody Docheff would be there and get visibly upset and yell at him about all of these things. That's according to Marv.
That's a good look for him.
Right, that's a good look. So in 2001, 2 years later, Granby Zoning Commission and the trustees approved the construction of the concrete plant. Heemeyer had unsuccessfully appealed the decision. He also talked about how it was going to block access to his shop. But according to the acting mayor, all of these objections that he came up with, you know, because there's two sides of this story, mm-hmm. all of the objections were valid, and they brought this up to Cody Docheff, and he was like, you know, you need to make sure that your plant is running within sound, you know, within noise pollution regulations, within dust pollution regulations, within water pollution regulations, and Cody Docheff was okay with it.
Okay.
So according to the acting mayor, all of the objections that Marv had put up actually helped to make a safer plant for everybody.
Okay, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, Marv decides that he's going to get a lawyer and he's going to sue Cody Docheff to try to get him to stop building this plant, right? And then Marv sinks like $50,000 worth of his money into trying to sue this guy in court. In the summer of, what was it? In the summer of 92, right after Marv had built his plant, maybe not 92, I think it's 2002, the city wanted to, they annexed his part of land into the city limits, right? So what that meant for Marv was that he was going to have to connect to the water, to the sewer water. He only had septic at that point, right? So he was going to get connected. A guy named Ron Thompson, who was an owner of a construction company, like grading and leveling and surfacing, stuff like that, was sitting on the city council, and he took an active, according to Marv, the Thompson family took an active role in making this process very difficult for him to get connected into the city sewer. Right. The Thompson family also was an old family from Granby. They had a lot of money. They owned a lot of land. They had this excavation company. Ron Thompson and his two brothers, who were named Larry and Gary. I cannot make this shit up.
For fuck's sake.
Of course they are. They all worked there, and they were making it really difficult. The idea was that he was going to have to run a sewer line, you know, like 80 feet. Up to the city's line, and it was going to cost him tens of thousands of dollars to be able to do this. So he doesn't want to do it, and he ultimately got fined $2,500 by the city council because he wasn't hooked up. They expected him to pay nearly $80,000 to lay the connection out of his own pocket.
Jesus Christ.
Right? So he ends up paying the fine with a check, and in the memo line of the check, he put cowards and liars. And paid his fine all angry with his righteous white anger. And according to Marv, the city returned the check to him because the amount was wrong. And so he went back up there to the county clerk's office or wherever it is, the tax assessor, I don't know what it is, and chewed him out up and down, this poor lady who's just trying to do her job, right? So again, Marv had gotten an attorney, and he was suing the Dochev family, trying to keep them from building the plant. But he was upset because they just kept building, like it was not going to, like there was nothing that was going to stop them. And eventually he lost his case. And according to Marv, he spent like $150,000 at the end of it to try to get it stopped. And nothing ever happened to it. His attorney refused to appeal the verdict and was like, you just got to cut your losses, man.
Yeah.
Right? So then, according to Cody Dochev, Cody was connecting to the city's sewer line because the line ran closer to his property. And Cody had mentioned to him, listen, Marv, if you want to connect to mine, it's called an easement. If you want to connect to my sewer, you can. Just drop the lawsuit that you have against us.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't do it.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Right.
Come on, bud.
Right. So at this point, Marv says, here it goes. Here's where he starts going off the rails. He was sitting in his hot tub at some point. And he was just mulling over everything that had happened. And he says that God sent him a message.
Oh, for fuck's
sake.
About
what, at a mission of what he needed to do to get back to everybody who had who had done him wrong. So according to Larry Thompson, Larry and Gary Thompson, ugh, Marv confronted him saying that he owed him $300,000 and that one day he was going to collect the money.
I'm going to collect.
I'm going to get that money. I'm going to take it out of your ass one day.
Oh, my God. Hey, real quick. Stomp again. Goodness gracious. Okay, I think we are back in action now. My camera is not enjoying working like it should.
My God.
But anyway, we're back. So you may continue now.
I don't even remember what I was talking about. No, okay. So he confronts Larry Thompson. And says that he's going to collect his money sometime because he ruined his business. Another guy that they talked about, another guy that was involved was a guy named Patrick Brower, who owned the newspaper. And Brower had been wanting, according to Brower, he had been wanting to run an article about Marv Heemeyer and his muffler shop. And he would go by the business and Marv wasn't there. He kind of worked whatever hours he wanted to. That's his side of the story. Marv says that every time I try to get a hold of Patrick Brower to tell the story about what was happening to me in Granby, Colorado, he would never come around. He's just another one of those liars. He's another cheat. He's another part of the good old boys club trying to ruin me. Oh, so finally, Patrick was like, look, man, God, you know, stop crying. Give your balls a tug, you tit fucker. Decides, says, look, I'll run a $200 ad in the paper for you. Just a free ad, just to get you off my fucking back. So he does.
Being annoying mm-hmm. does have its perks.
Apparently. Another guy that was into this was a guy named Casey Farrell. Casey Farrell was the acting city council, the head of the city council at the time when they were doing the concrete plant. He also owned a tool store called Gamble's in the center of town. Marv also was upset at him because he let the concrete plant go. Eventually, Marv decides that he's going to sell his land and his business. He's going to liquidate his assets, sell his land to Cody Dochev so that he can just be done with it. So he decides, he tells Cody Dochev, if you give me $250,000, you can have my land. And Cody Dochev says, sure, we'll do it. And then he almost immediately changes his mind and says, no, it's going to be $375,000.
Come on, dude.
He's like, fine, we'll pay that. Just get you to shut the fuck up. And then he ups it all the way to $1 million. And it's like, you got to be out of your fucking mind, man. No. No. So this goes on. This has been going on for 10 years at this point.
Man's got to give up.
10 years he's been doing this. So this is when it gets really crazy.
This is what I've been waiting for.
So in the summer of 2002, Marv goes to an auction, an equipment auction in California, and buys a bulldozer, a big motherfucking bulldozer.
Yes, he does.
And he has it shipped from California all the way to his muffler shop. And then in 2003, Marv decides he's going to shut down the muffler shop. He auctions off all of his property. The only two things that didn't sell in the auction were the bulldozer and like the one warehouse that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And so Marv says, because he left, he recorded all this on audio cassette. Marv says that if God and the town had taken those two things from him, he would have been content. But instead, he leases his property to another business owner who's going to use it as a staging spot for his trash pickup business.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all these trash trucks. They're going to put them there, and then they're going to move them around the city. So this one business owner buys his land and within 24 hours hooks it up to the city sewer system. No big deal.
Oh my God.
Right.
Dude.
So Marv back leases that one bit of property, that one warehouse for him, and then backs the bulldozer. We'll show a photo of the bulldozer in a minute. He backs the bulldozer into the warehouse, into the metal barn, basically,
mm-hmm.
and puts it there. At that point, he sells all of his home. He sells his home in Granby, most all of his possessions. He gives away his snowmobiles, and then he transfers the money. He ended up selling his business for $400,000, and he starts transferring the money in $50,000 increments to his dad. And then his dad wills it to his two brothers, Marv's two brothers and his sister,
mm-hmm.
right? And then his father dies. And he goes to the funeral, pays his respects, says his final goodbyes, and goes back to Granby. And then he sets himself up in the metal warehouse with just the fucking bulldozer. He's got like a hot plate. He's got a little TV VCR combo. And he's just living in there. And this is what he does. For the next 18 months, he's living in the muffler shop, living on a cot. He sleeps during the day. He put up security cameras so he could always see what was going on. And at night, he's working on his grand plan.
Yes.
He had bought this modified, he'd bought this bulldozer, Komatsu D355A. We'll show a photo to it. He referred to it as his MK tank in the audio recordings that he made. And he starts using his welding skills to fit it with makeshift armor plating to cover the cabin, yes. the engine, and parts of the tracks.
Yes.
In certain places, the armor was over 1 foot thick, consisting of 5,000 PSI quickcrete concrete mix and sandwiched between the sheets of tool steel. So it was, you got tool steel, you've got an area in here that's filled with concrete, you got another section of tool steel, half inch thick. He makes this armor for it. It's basically impervious to small arms fire and resistant to explosives. He also fitted it with video cameras so he could see while he was driving it. And he fitted it with gun ports with little windows,
yes,
for his cameras that were fitted with multiple sheets of Lexan plastic, which is bulletproof, mm-hmm, and a compressed air system inside the cabin so that he could blow away dust and debris so that he can continue to see while he drove this thing. It was armored all the way around. All the way around. And yeah, it had its own independent ventilation system fitted at the top.
Yes.
Yes. He ended up putting in a 50 caliber rifle in it, and a 308 semi-automatic rifle, and a 22 long rifle, all fitted in gun turrets inside the cabin of this bulldozer. What is it? He also so he's got it all ready. 18 months he's been working on this thing, and at some point he decides he's going to record audio tapes of everything that's happened. So he gets all of these audio tapes ready. He records them. He puts them in a Ziploc bag and he mails them to his brother. And then on the for sale sign that he had on his bulldozer, he writes out basically like a last will and testament about all the people that had done him wrong and everything that he's going to do to them.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. And then authorities speculated that he may have used a homemade crane to lower the armor hole over the dozer and himself, because once it was closed in, there was no way for him to get out. There was no hatch.
Oh, shit.
There was no way out once he was inside of it. What does he say? It's interesting. In the tapes, he says, "It is interesting to observe that I was never caught. This was a part-time project over 1.5 years. He was surprised because several men had visited his shed, and none of them ever saw it because he had it covered in tarps. But somehow he did it." Here's the best part about it, is that in the audio recordings that he tells, he says, "My name's Marv Humar. My serial number is blah, 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 blah." It's not a serial number anymore, man. You're not a World War II vet. It's a social security number. And he says the best part about it. This is the best part. He says, "I just want first and foremost everybody to know that I'm a patriot." Oh my fucking God.
There it is.
The only people in the world who ever call themselves patriots are old white men like this. And it's before they either commit a hate crime or an act of domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. That's the only time anyone ever describes themselves as that. No one ever says, "First and foremost, I'm a patriot. That's why I think that we should have immigration reform and abolish ICE." Or, I'm a patriot, and that's why I think that we should have universal health care. Or that women should have reproductive rights, and the church and the state shouldn't have any mandate according to that.
It's like you only ever say "it's a free country" when you're doing something shitty. That's how you
the only know. People say, "well, it's a free country" is when they're trying to infringe on people's rights.
Yeah, exactly.
Because fucking they're afraid jackasses. Of those other people. Bunch of fucking jackasses. "First and foremost, I'm a patriot." So of course this guy's not going to commit a hate crime, because the only people that he hates are white people. But he is going to commit an act of domestic terrorism.
If it ain't one, it's the other. But it's usually both, so at least it's not a hate crime. Mm-hmm. I'll give him that.
So, on June 4th, 2004, Marv lowers himself into the bulldozer. There is no hatch, like I said. There is no way out of this motherfucking thing. He cranks this motherfucker up, and he blasts through the door of his own warehouse.
Fuck yeah!
And then pulls around over to the concrete plant. And he goes over to Cody Dochev's concrete plant and just starts to tear shit up.
Dude, the only thing I'm hearing right now is fucking Kid Rock's American Badass. I know this dude was blasting that shit inside of his fucking machine.
I'm sure he was.
Oh my God.
So if I don't know whether we can do this or not, but this would be the point where you would pull the lever, Kronk. I don't know if you can get that that slideshow going.
We've got slideshow pulled up. We are now looking at a photo gallery inside the bulldozer's devastation.
Inside the bulldozer's devastation. So he pulls over to Cody Dochev, and he starts just turning over trucks, running over trucks, tearing into the side of his building, just creating mass destruction. They don't know who was in it at this point. So Cody Dochev goes in, and he's got like a 357 Magnum or a 38, and he starts trying to shoot at it. Well, nothing is getting to it. So then they've got a frantic 911 call. There's somebody destroying my concrete plant. Get over here with the cops. Cops show up. They've got their sidearms. Nothing's getting into it. They're shooting it with, you know, pistols. They're shooting it with shotguns. They got like one or two guys with AR-15s. Nothing is happening. They've got like a SWAT team of five guys because it's a small town, and nothing. And he's just running over all of this stuff. At some point, Cody Dochev tried to jump onto the back because it's got like one of those big ugly hooks.
Mm-hmm.
But he had greased it down with like machine grease so they couldn't get on top.
What a fucking dude.
So he smashes this for like 10 or 15 minutes. Cody Dochev goes and gets into a cement mixer or another heavy equipment, and he's trying to push it to try to get it off of its treads. Well, it's not heavy enough. The heavy equipment thing that he's got isn't heavy enough to pull it over. So the marksman that they had from the sheriff's office for the SWAT team is trying to shoot at it. There's nothing. I mean, there's it's impervious. Somebody comes up with a 50 caliber for him to use, and the bullets don't penetrate.
Holy shit. Still going.
Not only that, but Marv is inside with his own guns, and he can shoot. He's firing at these guys.
He's got the little mm-hmm. window ports for it. Fuck, dude, this thing is sick looking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest with you. Are you saving the name reveal, or can I say it?
Go ahead.
He calls this thing the Killdozer.
He calls it the Killdozer.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You cannot tell me that does not look like a fucking Killdozer.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this shit.
So, all in all, the attack lasted 2 hours and 7 minutes. He damaged 13 buildings. He knocks out Cody Dochev's area. He goes into town. He goes to the Thompson's excavation plant, and he destroys their building. He runs over a couple of their trucks.
Fuck yeah.
He's hitting their warehouses. He goes in the middle of town where Larry and Gary's mom and dad used to live. His mom lives there, and he demolishes her house.
Oh my God.
He goes, he was trying to get to the Catholic church, but he couldn't get to the Catholic church. So then he goes to the mayor's office, which is also where the city council is, where also is the library, and he destroys that.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Mm-hmm. He goes next to the propane tank area of the town, to this one propane business, and he was trying to shoot incendiary 50 caliber rounds into the propane tanks to try to get try to destroy them, but he couldn't. Let's see here. Damage was estimated at $7 million. At some point, they had sent out a reverse 911 emergency system call to all the residents to shelter in place. You know,
mm-hmm.
But once they realize that he's just going, there's no way to stop him. At one point, they pulled out a city grader, one of those ones with the scraper, and they try to push it. But Marv was just able to push the thing out of the way.
Oh my God!
So then they use the reverse 911 system to try to evacuate the center of town to get away from him. One of this bakery owner said that Marv went out of his way not to harm anybody. But at the same time, he's just destroying everything. At some point, the actual sheriff of the town or the chief of police got on top of the Killdozer, was able to climb on top, and was trying to use flashbang grenades into the exhaust port to try to disorient Marv. But none of it worked. He said when he got on top, it was all steel plating, and the only thing that you could see was the fan, where it was this inside ventilation system. But it was so closed off that it didn't seem like anything was going to stop him. Nothing
Fuck,
stopped
dude.
Him. He had fired, all of these rounds at other people. They talked about how if he had been able to rupture and explode the propane tanks, anyone within 1/2 mile of the explosion would have been endangered. 12 police officers, and residents of a senior citizen complex were within range when he was firing at that.
Oh shit.
Mm-hmm. He fired on Cody Dochev. They tried to use the scraper, and they couldn't do it. He fired on 2 state patrol officers. They fired at him. They were firing back and forth. At one point, you can watch, you know, archived footage, and they're showing it from a helicopter, and they're showing it from on the ground. The cops are going alongside it, and they're just trying to fire at it, and nothing penetrates.
That is fucking wild.
There is no penetration.
And I'm looking at these photos from this slideshow, mm-hmm. and I mean, it is like a whole entire bank is like fucking off center. Mm-hmm. Like the whole bottom is destroyed. There's pictures where you can't even tell what these buildings are. It's just rubble. Mm-hmm. Here's the Maple Street Builders one where it looks like he just rammed one of their trucks into the building.
Yeah. The best part is that you can hear what is it? Let me see. The governor considered authorizing the National Guard to either use an Apache attack helicopter or maybe an attack plane to try to fire a missile and destroy the bulldozer, the killdozer.
Oh shit.
He tried to deny it, but there's actual recording clips of him saying that.
Oh, that's funny.
So at the end of these 2 hours, a couple of things happen right away. He leaves the propane area and he's going back into the center of town and he's headed towards Gamble's tool store. And he's going, and you can see that the bulldozer starts to leak coolant because there's white smoke coming out from the top of it, and there's coolant leaking down on the ground. And so, you know, it's obviously overheating, and the power is failing on it. But he gets to the Gamble's tool store, and he just destroys the front of the tool store. Just takes his bulldozer and just smashes runs
right across it.
Mm-hmm. And then he turns like a 90-degree angle and starts going down this narrow alleyway to destroy the side of it. Well, as he was doing that, one of the things that he didn't know was that Gamble's tool store had a basement in mm-hmm. the back. And so as he's driving, he's losing power at the same time. His right tread falls into the... It falls into the basement, right? And it slows down and it stops and there's no more power. And they're still waiting to see what happens, right? At one point, they thought that they heard a gunshot from the inside. But a couple of hours go by, and they're still trying to figure out what's going to happen. The police try to use explosives to remove the steel plates. They actually put three explosive charges onto the bulldozer to try to destroy it, to try to open it up.
Yeah,
and nothing happened. And what what they decided was at this point, even if they weren't able to open it, the force of that explosion had to have like pulverized him on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't any movement
or anything like that. From coming to it. So they actually had to use an oxygen acetylene cutting torch to get into it. And when they opened it up, they found that Marv had shot himself in the head with a .357 Magnum and killed himself.
Jesus, man.
Mm-hmm. And thus ended the craziness of Marv Hemeyer. In the aftermath, the town scrapped the killdozer. And just cut it into different pieces and sold it to different scrapyards because they didn't want to make it souvenir. If you look up Marv Hemeyer Killdozer, there are so many.
Oh yeah,
so many people out there. This is this is one man's fight against the man and all this other bullshit. The guy had $400,000 from selling it. Don't act like he didn't have anything.
Yeah, I mean,
he could have just moved away and gone somewhere else.
It's fun to be jazzed about this because mm-hmm. he fucking made himself an impervious fucking destruction mm-hmm. machine that he named the goddamn Killdozer. So it's, on the surface, tight as fuck. But also, he's not a great dude. And I'm looking at these pictures right now, and these, like, complete cop cars, trucks, they're all folded in like mm-hmm. paper. It's like... He just fucking crumples these things like they're nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to look at all these people, like, I mean, the destruction of all these fucking businesses and homes and shit. And then it's just cut in with, like, pictures of people using, like, the torches, trying to get it open and, like, shooting it. There's this one that I'm looking at right now is, like, the back shot of the killdozer, and there's somebody on top, like, trying to do something with, like, the top part of it while a cop is watching.
That's either the sheriff or the chief of police. Yeah, that was when he was trying to find any kind of entryway, and he was trying to find a way to throw a flashbang in there to disorient him.
Yeah, and here's one where they're, like, trying to cut through some of this fucking steel.
There was no escape hatch. Once he was in, he was not coming out.
Oh, yeah, and that's fucking wild to me. Like, for one thing, he made himself unstoppable. But, like, he knew as soon as he dropped that thing on, like, that was it for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had a gun ready to go. He was not going to be making it out of there alive. But that is just fucking buck wild, man.
Yeah. The craziest part was that, of course, when they try to go after his assets to collect damages, it was almost impossible because he'd given the money to his dad and then his dad had willed it to his brothers mm-hmm. and his sister. And so it was nearly impossible for them to sue his survivors for damages.
That is, yeah, that's fucking crazy, dude.
Mm-hmm.
God, the fucking killdozer, man.
Killdozer. Marv Heemeyer and his killdozer.
That is fucking crazy. I fucking, ooh, I was so excited. I was really thinking that this was going to be the topic you were doing, but it wasn't 100%, and I am so fucking jazzed. Also, I know that Cade fucking loves this story. Mm-hmm. He loves the killdozer.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But fucking look at that, man. That is really something. What a fucking fella.
It's just insane to do this.
Oh, yeah. This is not a thing that a normal, sane, or, like, cool dude would do.
No. This is the work of a madman.
This is supervillain shit.
Again, supervillain shit.
There's no other way around it. This man is just straight up supervillain.
Yeah. I mean, in 30 years, if this had happened 30 years in the future, he would have built himself a mech.
Mm-hmm. God, can you imagine, like, the far future's version of the killdozer? Somebody gets a hold of this dude's fucking manuscripts or some shit, makes killdozer 2.0. Fuck yeah. I hope I'm alive. First and foremost,
I want everybody to know that I'm a patriot. Get the fuck out of here.
Fuck off.
Anyway, there it is.
Damn, son.
Marv Heemeyer and the killdozer.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Oh, it's crazy.
So good.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing this to the table.
Of course. Of course.
Beautiful.
Okay, guys, don't forget, if you want your pet showcased in Petty Crimes, let us know. Send us a photo. Get to us through twoscaredpodcast@gmail.com or through Instagram, twoscaredpodcast, and send us, you know, a photo of your pets, animals. It doesn't matter what kind of pet it is.
Whatever you got. We'll take them all.
Yeah, and a short bio. Tell us what they like, what they do.
Yeah.
What silly things they do.
What sins they've committed.
What sins they've committed? Oh, my God. Look at this guy. Draw me like one of your French girls.
Oh, my fucking God. Is that Boomer?
Of course it is.
Oh, my God. Oh, what an angel. Oh, you got to post that on the Instagram.
My sweet baby boy. All right. That's all I got, brother.
So good. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
Speaking of beautiful, thank you to all you beautiful people who come here and watch and listen to us. This one, you probably do want to watch instead of listen to. Because, you know, we got some cool shit going on this one.
Yeah.
But thank you. However you choose to support, we appreciate it. And we appreciate you. Send us pictures of your pets.
Send us pictures of your pets for petty crimes.
Don't you want to be a part of this show? The coolest show? This is objectively the coolest podcast.
Join us. Join us.
Join us.
All right. I'm good. I got to go to bed. I got a real job. I got to get up and get dressed and leave my house.
Ugh. Yeah, me too.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed this topic from Dylan, my co-host. My name is Jake, and we hope we've left you too scared to sleep.